Hello and welcome to the Airline Weekly Lounge. I'm your host, Gordon Smith. And this week, I'm joined by co-host Jay Shabbat to discuss the latest earnings and trends from United Airlines. Hey, Jay, how's it going?
Oh, good. I'm all good. I'm ready for earnings season here. We're just getting into it. We got a big lineup of airlines that we'll be reporting over the next couple of weeks.
Huge roll call of names coming up. I feel like it's almost the first day of Advent or the opening week of Advent, and you know you've got all the excitement of December ahead of you and Christmas and everything else, the holiday season, whatever you choose to celebrate. December's such an exciting month, and as airline geeks like we are, earnings season almost has that same sort of excitement, anticipation, dare I say even a little bit of magic. We had Delta results not too long ago. Today, literally in the past hours, we're recording here on Wednesday afternoon my time, Wednesday morning with you, Jay, we've been hearing the earnings call from United Airlines. They actually posted their numbers after the markets closed yesterday. That's Tuesday. And you know, my take, I'll let you share yours in a minute, but yes, there was a loss, but not a bad one. And the MAX was clearly a factor. What was your view, Jay? Talk us through the key things that our listeners need to know.
Yes, and as Gordon mentioned, we're just moving over from having finished listening to the United call, so we're still digesting it. But we even delayed our usual recording time here so that we can get in the full United earnings call. So it's all fresh in our mind here. And I agree that the results were, even though the headline number was red, it was a loss, $50 million net loss, ex special items. I thought the results were rather strong. Now, they did earn an operating profit, so they had an operating margin of about 1%, and that compares to 5% for Delta. Delta, if you recall, reported a week earlier, so 5% versus 1%. Now, you mentioned, Gordon, that they had the MAX 9 troubles. Their MAX 9 was grounded for during the first quarter. They estimated that grounding cost them something like $200 million, a little bit over. If you add that $200 million back in, just for, you know, how, you know, is that the most accurate way to do that? Just to get a sense of what that would do to its numbers. If you add it like just right on top of the operating profit, the margin would have been 2.5%. So still about half of what Delta did. The other thing I would, you know, caution people when comparing Delta to United by quarter is that United's first quarter, it tends to be their worst quarter seasonally. It's just the nature of their network. They have a lot of, you know, east-west type flying that tends to peak in the summer. If you think of, you know, their Transcon and some of the Trans-Pacific stuff, they also don't have as much, north-south flying down to, let's say, Florida or South America or, Arizona as some other airlines. So keep all of that in mind. But again, a headline operating margin, ex special items of 1%.
I do feel a little bit sorry for United being compared so often to Delta. Delta seems like the whiz kid in the class that's getting the A-plus grades and GPA. Is that what you use sometimes in the US? Maybe that's more of a university thing. But whatever metric you use, there seems to be someone in the class that's always just that bit better. Obviously, we've got others in the industry. I'm thinking perhaps of American that might even like to be in United's shoes. Everything's relative, I guess. But do you agree, Jay, that maybe the direct comparisons between United and Delta at least are a little unfair?
Junior, why can't you be more like your big brother Delta? You know,
pretty much.
I agree. The standards are very high. And if Delta and United are sort of in a class by themselves, now there are a couple of low-cost carriers like, you know, Sun Country or whatever. I think Allegiant is, their numbers are still pretty high. So, it's they're not the only ones doing well, but yeah, Delta and United of the big ones have really stood out in recent quarters. Absolutely.
And just coincidence that they're both first out the gate in terms of earnings season?
Coincidence in terms of their earnings, the timing of their earnings release, yes, but no coincidence why they are doing so well and so much better than everyone else. Now, Scott Kirby had an interesting thesis about why Delta and United are doing so well. And one of the things he said was that the elimination of change fees, ticket change fees, during the pandemic, back in 2000, he ascribed quite a bit of significance to that, more than I think that I certainly recognized or realized, assuming what he says is accurate. Even more than Kirby himself, I think, realized. He said so much in the call that, look, I didn't realize how large this segment of, in particular, small business travelers, how much they really cared about change fees. So United feels like they're getting a lot more of that sort of traffic now, small business people, you know, flying within the United States, say, because they, you know, these are people that tend to need flex, that have varying travel plans, that, you know, they need to change flights and they didn't want to pay those fees. Now they don't have to pay those fees anymore. So United thinks they're getting a lot of that business. Interestingly enough, just as an aside, I know this discussion is about United and not Southwest, but you would have to believe that Southwest would kind of be the biggest loser here with these change fee changes, the eliminated change fees. You'd have to think they were getting the advantage of, you know, not having the fees before. Now they don't have that advantage anymore. So assuming, again, we're making the assumption here that what Kirby is saying is in fact, you know, as significant as he thinks. But if that's the case, yeah, you have to think that Southwest would be the biggest loser.
Educated assumptions, perhaps, to put it more politely, Jay. Thank you for those insights. You mentioned the 200 million figure there as the impact from the temporary grounding of the Boeing MAX 9 aircraft in January. I think, right, so it was January as well, not February. United essentially pulled the MAX 10 from its schedule indefinitely because of the growing uncertainty. That doesn't mean the MAX 10 is not going to appear in its fleet, quite the opposite. But it hinted that we simply don't know when these planes are going to be certified, never mind actually arrive with us. So we're going to be making some alternative plans in the meantime, perhaps bringing in more of the smaller MAX 9, et cetera. What's your opinion, Jay, on the situation with United and the MAX?
The Boeing delays in particular, and let's just forget about the MAX 9 grounding, but all these delays in getting aircraft on time, it's been extremely costly for United because and remember, United has a very aggressive fleet growth plan, so they've been expecting quite a lot of these planes, and these planes have been very instrumental in their strategic vision. I mean, this whole United Next program is their business plan is very much premised on getting these, you know, very large, low unit cost airplanes and to compete in domestic markets where they might have not competed as well in the past. And so they, assuming that, you know, they had this expectation of getting X number of planes, and so they hired X number of pilots and X number of flight attendants and X number of, you know, crew. So they suddenly found that they're finding themselves they're just overstaffed, and that has just been really bad for their unit cost. So they have had to, you know, kind of go back to Boeing and kind of reschedule everything. And it sounds like from the call that they're sort of back, they kind of have things, you know, sort of straightened out with Boeing now. And in the meantime, they still want these bigger planes. So they've gone to Airbus. And of course, they're, you know, it's not like they have planes sitting around waiting to be, but Airbus was able to accommodate them to, you know, a certain extent, and will be delivering them more A321neos than United originally ordered. So it's been a real headache for them. It looks like, and again, we're speaking here on Wednesday, so by the time you all are listening, perhaps this will have changed, but it looks like Wall Street and investors are pleasantly, they like what they're hearing from, they like what they heard this morning from United's call, because their stock price is moving up quite nicely here.
For sure, yeah. I had a little look before we started our recording, and I think I'm right in saying United was the best performer in the S&P 500 as we speak. Shares jumping 5% at one point. It does need a little bit of context, though, because I think the stock has fallen about 15% so far in April. So making up some of that lost ground. And you touched there as well, Jay, on the additional Airbus aircraft. United said on Tuesday in the after hours results that it had agreed letters of intent with two lessors for 35 new Airbus A321neos, which it expects to receive in 2026 and 2027. So diversifying the fleet, but still very much keeping that relatively broad 60-40 split between the two major OEMs. Interesting as well, I thought on the call that United said they're probably going to level out aircraft deliveries to around 100 per year, but they weren't going to put all of those into the schedule. So they're going to bake in some wiggle room. So essentially predicting that some of these aircraft won't necessarily arrive when they think they will. So United suggested that maybe of the 100 per year, only 90 will go into the schedule. So there will be a few extras. And the company's saying, yes, that will hit the bottom line, but it's not nearly as expensive as overstaffing by 40 airplanes, which is what the situation currently is. It seems like they are having to assume that more delays and more disruption to supply chains and to deliveries is on the way, Jay.
Yeah, I think that's just, you know, prudent conservative planning. Thanks, by the way, for I think you're right to clarify that United is getting those additional A320neos through lessors, not directly from Airbus. I hope I didn't mislead anyone in there, but exactly what you said. I mean, they're, you know, they understand what's going on. The Boeing and Airbus skyline, very unpredictable, so they, you know, they're just being prudent about, okay, if we think we're getting, we want 100, but you know, we got to build some buffer into the system. We're not going to overhire this time. So yeah, I think it makes sense.
I don't envy the network planners and the operational planners, not just at United, but across the industry around the world. Incredibly difficult to try and strategize just now when there are so many variables in the mix. And you could argue, hell, if you're a network planner, then you need to be used to variables. That's how you make your money, trying to work out how a big company navigates its way through so many different challenging situations.
Right.
Not just at home, but around the world. But go ahead.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt, Gordon. I was just going to say, don't shed too many tears for those, those United executives, because remember, I think it's, you know, worth stepping back and issuing the reminder here that all of these supply side shortages, you know, too few aircraft, result in higher, you know, unit revenues for the industry. And yeah, it's frustrating. And yeah, it's, you know, this max grounding is costly, or that delivery delay is causing, you know, or that set of delivery delays is causing overstaffing. And yeah, that's all true. But if Boeing and Airbus were delivering all of their planes exactly when they said they would, and there were no problems with, you know, the gear turbofan engines or anything else out there, I don't think in my mind there's you know, that revenues would be really nearly as strong as they are.
What a beautiful world that would be. No aircraft delays, no supply chain issues. It would actually make for quite a boring podcast. So I get
yeah, a boring podcast, and perhaps beautiful, but also you know, lower revenue, you know, more capacity.
Indeed.
So, or I should say low, yeah, or just the unit revenues might not be as strong.
For sure. Before we go into our very quick break, Jay, let's just take a step back and just look at demand, because you hinted there. We've got a finite number of aircraft. Demand still seems strong. So supply and demand prices are going to remain high, at least on average, with regards to overall airfares. United said that domestic passenger revenue rose 6.6% compared with the first quarter in 2023. Whilst international revenue jumped 16%. So people clearly still want to fly, even if the fares are a little higher.
Yeah, awesome revenue performance. I mean, just great on the revenue side. I mean, that's the first thing that struck me when I opened up the earnings release, was that just how strong the domestic unit revenues were. and Europe as well. The numbers don't look good on Pacific and Latin. I think there's, but there's also been just like a ton of capacity, additional capacity in those markets. So I don't think that's a sign that those markets are struggling by any means. I just think that they're, you know, there's a lot of new capacity. But yeah, it's the just same thing we talked about a week ago with Delta. I mean, premium, very, very strong. Domestic and international, both very, very strong. They said, you know, business travel, corporate travel, really coming back strong now. There's no large areas, no really significant areas of weakness pretty much anywhere. It's a really good news story.
I think it was Scott Kirby in the earnings call just in the past hour. He said, we've sharpened our pencil with regards to European capacity, which I thought was interesting. And he also offered some color with regards to the situation in LATAM. Stay with us, Jay. We're going to take a very short break. In part two, we will be looking at some of the routes that United have been offering, looking at the US economy and how that may be taking an impact on things, and also the enormous impact of the Mileage Plus loyalty program on its bottom line. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after this very short break. Hello and welcome back to the Airline Weekly Lounge. I'm your host, Gordon Smith. And this week, I'm joined by co-host Jay Shabbitt. And in part one, we were discussing United Airlines. And surprise, surprise, part two, we will continue discussing United because there is so much to unpack, Jay. What, looking as an outsider into the US market, Denver seems to have gone from almost nothing. That would be unfair. It has always been a regional hub, but United seems to have found some sort of secret sauce that is just making Denver a real powerhouse. Talk us through, especially for those listeners, maybe listening from further afield who aren't quite so familiar with Denver. What makes it such an important part of the United network?
Right. Well, nothing specific that came up about Denver in the first quarter earnings, the first quarter call. It's just something I wanted to highlight because it is now, if we're looking at just the second quarter capacity, so seat capacity, I'm looking at Cirium DO data here. Denver is the busiest airport in the United Airlines network, which is almost hard to imagine. If you go back 5 years ago, so pre-COVID, Q2 of 2019, Denver was number four. So it moved up to number one, and just the growth in seats percentage wise over those 5 years, 24% growth. There's nothing in United system. I mean, no meaningful market in United system that's grown anything nearly that fast. You'd have to go. I'm just looking at the list there. You have to go down to like Phoenix, which grew 35%, but that's like pretty far down. You know, it's not a hub for them. So it's so Denver's just become more and more and more important to the United network. And it really is, the economy is booming there. I mean, the population growth, very, very strong. Interestingly enough, it's a three airline hub in a sense, because you've also got Southwest, you've also got Frontier. Now, obviously the fact that they're growing it suggests that they're making a lot of money there. And, you know, we don't know that 100% true. Maybe they, you know, there's always situations where, well, we're losing money now, but we think we can make money in the future if we make it bigger. But I suspect that it is a nicely profitable hub for United. I suspect the margins are pretty good there. And that's why they've thrown so much new capacity into it. Now, reverting back to what we were talking about before with Southwest, Southwest is huge in Denver. That's also, you know, I don't know if that's their busiest route, probably not, but it's certainly top five for them. And, you know, maybe remember what we said before about maybe those change fees moving a lot of passengers who used to fly Southwest and now they're flying United. Maybe that whole phenomenon is very real in Denver. Maybe that's a good example of a place where that's taking. This is, you know, I'm being speculative here, but something to consider. But yeah, Denver, you know, great economy, great market, great hub for United.
And if I was listening in Chicago, I might be thinking, hang on a minute, what happened to once upon a time when United was Chicago's airline?
Well, Chicago is interesting. They're down. I mean, seats are down 4% there over the past 5 years. So it's a hub that's where United has contracted. And remember that American, which also has a Chicago hub, I mean, those two always, you know, we're going head to head for decades in Chicago. American has basically gutted Chicago. So you would think, I mean, if you knew nothing else, you would think, well, Americans, you know, basically retreating from Chicago. So United probably is, you know, stepping in with more capacity, right? And no, it's actually less. Now, obviously, Southwest is very big over at Midway Airport in Chicago, too. That may be their busiest route in their system. I'm not sure at this particular time, whether it's that or Vegas or Baltimore, but it might be, I haven't looked, but maybe, you know, Southwest has grown a little bit there in Chicago. But in general, I mean, Chicago is a market that whose population is not growing, whose economy is still pretty, I mean, it's, you know, let's not badmouth Chicago here. I mean, it's still, you know, a lot of Fortune 500 companies, a lot of tourism, a lot. I mean, it's a huge, it's third biggest population in the United States in terms of metro area. So very, you know, huge, huge market, but just not growing like in the way that you'll see in a place like Denver or a lot of these Sunbelt markets, you know, Dallas and Houston and Charlotte and some of these hubs where, you know, airlines have been adding a tremendous amount of capacity. Now, if I can just add, talk about one more United hub. I found it very interesting that Houston, which is very much a like super fast growing, you know, Sunbelt hub in terms of, you know, population growth and economic growth and all that. But United's capacity in Houston has actually really been more or less flat. I see like 2% growth since 2019. And that surprises me a little. Now, Houston is obviously very geared towards the energy sector and, you know, a lot of that's kind of think of Houston as the energy capital of the United States. So a lot depends, you know, if oil prices are booming, then, you know, your Exxons and your I don't know if they're headquartered there, but you get the point. The big oil companies are going to travel more and, you know, it's going to add more capacity. But yeah, just that was interesting to me that they are not growing Houston. We'll have to put the crack Skift Airline Weekly team on that question about why not. But and then you've got, you know, Newark has grown quite a bit. San Francisco is down mostly because, you know, a lot of Asia exposure there. There's, you know, a lot of that China stuff has gone away. And I will stop there. There's Washington Dulles, there's Los Angeles, and I think that covers all of the hub, all the United hubs, Gordon.
Comprehensive answer, if nothing else, Jay. Thank you.
Yeah. Comprehensive is the nice word for droning on it, you know, talking too much.
Not at all. Let's take a really big step back, shall we? How much of this, and we can bring in Delta as well, and maybe some of the other results that we're going to be receiving over the next few weeks, how much are these numbers being flattered by the fact that the U.S. economy broadly is doing pretty well?
Yeah, that's another point that I think is worth making as well. The U.S. economy is just extremely strong right now, specifically if you're an airline. And I'm happy to, you know, for anyone who wants to talk about the U.S. economy, shoot me an email. I'm happy to talk about that in depth. It's something I follow very closely, something I've written about professionally. But right now, the service side of the economy, in particular, leisure, travel, tourism, very, very, very strong. And some of that relates to, you know, people's just look at what the stock market has done over the past couple of years and look at, you know, what housing prices, what's happened there over the last couple of years. And, you know, real incomes are up and you have this, you know, very large sort of demographic of retiring people who have not only the money to travel, but also the time to travel. And so there's just a lot of very positive economic forces that are lifting airlines. Now, how long will that last? Well, I think, you know, it's just a question that people, I mean, this whole thing really started coming out of the pandemic, 2022, 2023. I mean, everybody thought that there was going to be a recession in 2023 because the Fed was hiking interest rates and because the housing market had slowed and the manufacturing sector of the economy was slow. And the you know, on any kind of anything with like freight and cargo was and remains slow. Everybody said, oh yeah, there's definitely going to be a recession. But recession never came. I mean, second half of 23, very, very strong GDP growth in the US. first quarter growth is going to be coming a little slower, it looks like, if we go by the Atlanta Fed has a thing where they make for kind of running forecast of GDP. So there is some slowing, but still looks really good. So I think everyone's still asking that question. And by the way, I listened to several of the bank earnings that have come in, JP Morgan, I listened to Bank of America, I listened to Citigroup and Wells Fargo, and all those earnings calls, the executives are basically saying the same thing, that consumer looks good, they're spending money, and a lot of what they're spending on is travel. So it's you would think now United and Delta, you listen to their earnings calls and it all makes sense, right? It's like, yeah, that's the demand looks great. Now what'll get real interesting is when we start to hear the Spirits and the Frontiers and the Southwest, when they start reporting, are they going to be seeing the same thing? Because they have not been seeing to the same extent that demand strength. That'll be real interesting to see. And it could be because, they don't have the premium and people are spent, they have people with more money to spend are going to, go to the more premium oriented airlines rather than your Spirits and your Frontiers. But that's all to come. We'll have more to talk about when those guys report. Never a dull moment, right, Gordon?
Oh, I'll say. And to have a wallet full of cash and an empty diary to travel, that just sounds like the dream. All in good time, I'm sure. Let's touch very, very briefly, Jay, on loyalty programs. Mileage Plus was described during the earnings call as a crown jewel asset in United's arsenal of assets, if you like. It's huge business. That's not going anywhere, is it?
Not going anywhere. I mean, unless Congress decides to, change regulations whereby these credit card companies. And well, by the way, I only learned this recently, but Visa, I believe, is the most profitable company in the United States by profit margin. I may have that off a little bit, maybe it's worth it. But I believe I've heard a credible person say that, and I actually looked at their they run something like 50% margins or something on their it's you can see these credit card companies are just they're hugely and those are the credit card processors, the banks are there's different components of it, but it's a very, very profitable ecosystem in the US, and the airlines and their mileage programs are kind of right in the thick of that. So you can see perhaps one day on the horizon that Congress changes the laws and, those programs are not so profitable anymore. But people that I've talked to say, well, it's a very high hurdle for Congress to change anything because there are so many people that benefit. I mean, it's not just the airlines. It's not just the big, powerful banks. It's not just the Visas and MasterCards of the world, but it's also, it's you and I, Gordon. It's the traveling public that loves to collect miles. And again, I'm being long-winded today, but the simple answer to your question is, any change soon to these, how lucrative these mileage programs is? The answer is no. I mean, it's these are only going to stay extremely, these are extremely important cash cows for your Uniteds, your Deltas, your Americans, and, even Southwest, even Alaska. Let's go down the list. The bigger you are, the better.
Right. Just before we go, Jay, and we should say to our listeners that we'll have more on United's earnings on airlineweekly.com and in our weekly issue, both this weekend as earnings season matures. Just a very, very quick preview of the Airline Weekly profitability scoreboard for 2023. You've been gathering all the numbers from global airlines. We're going to have the full list revealed in, as we record Wednesday, next week's issue. So that should be dropping into your inboxes for Airline Weekly subscribers on Monday morning. Jay, in 30 seconds or less, give us a little taster of what we can expect.
The only thing I'll say is that it was a very good year. 2023 was a very good year. You'll see most of the airlines that that report their publicly report their numbers made money. There were a few that did not. But that was definitely the minority. And there were some, frankly, very surprising ones at the top. Some, usual suspects as well. But I encourage you to get the latest Airline Weekly issue that's going to come out Monday. What is the date on that? Is it the 22nd?
Absolutely right.
22nd. Yeah, that'll be where we have all of this data, and we'll have a feature story as well accompanying it. And I'll go into a little bit of, you know, our methodology, how we get these numbers and whatnot. So, I think everybody enjoyed that.
AirlineWeekly.com. It's not too late to subscribe to get access to the next issue. I'm looking at the numbers now, Jay, and you're absolutely right. There are more than a few surprises there. If you weren't already tempted, you should be. Jay, thanks so much for sharing your insights, particularly on United, an airline that we could discuss for many, many, many episodes, I'm sure, and we will be revisiting again before too long. Don't forget, you can always contact us via email, suggestions for the show, comments, feedback, whatever it may be. My address is gs@skift.com. That's G for Gordon, S for Smith, and J can be contacted as well as on LinkedIn at js@skift.com. That's J for J and S for Shabbat. My thanks to Jay for joining me this week, and wherever you are in the world, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Bye for now.
Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of the Airline Weekly Lounge podcast. Check out airlineweekly.com for a new issue every Monday and updates on the latest airline news throughout the week.